The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Force Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report.
Ah, yeah. What do we got? Yeah.
Normally, Ken does some music there, but he has now become clearly inspired by just the musical beauty that is O.C. Sobeck's Christopher Walken with a throat injury voice.
That was bad. I apologize. That should get me cut from Groundlings. Oh, wait, I already was cut from the Groundlings. That was horrible.
If it was horrible, how did I recognize it so immediately?
There you go. Always look at the bright side of life. Thank you, sir.
That's good. Yeah. We'll talk about O.C. Sobeck's beautiful, amazing voice, voiced by the great James Arnold Taylor, of course, and beautifully, beautifully imitated by Ken Knapsack. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. We love doing this show. We love diving deep into the Clone Wars. We are almost at the end of season three. This is the penultimate arc. The episodes we're talking about today is the Citadel Hell. That's what I'm calling it. Season 3, episode 18, The Citadel, written by Matt Maciejewicz and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Season 3, episode 19, Counterattack, written by Matt Maciejewicz and directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. And season 3, episode 20, Citadel Rescue, once again, written by Matt Maciejewicz and directed by Stuart Lee. It was really fun to revisit these episodes. Did you just have a good time revisiting these, Ken?
I did. I watched them. You know, we always watch episodes 2-3 times. Unless in the Mortis arc, you watch them 17 times to try to understand it all. I watched this really, like, the moment we finished the Mortis stuff, I was watching these ones already, which just spoke to, like, oh, yeah, let's get to this. Let's get to the fun and the pew-pew-pew of the Citadel.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of fun. There's a lot of pew-pew-pew, and there's a lot of hell. in a good way, I think. It's a fun hell. Yeah, there's so many things about this arc that I remember. It was really fun to fill in the gaps for the things that I don't remember all the time. Because I thought this summary would be much shorter, Ken. But once again, a decent amount happened. So are you ready for the summary?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. Hyperspace route intrigue. Jedi Master Evan Peel, or Evan Peel, as they say in the episode, has successfully acquired the secrets to the Nexus Route, a hyperspace lane that leads directly to both the Republic and Separatist home worlds. Before Peel can deliver the information, he and his crew are captured by the Separatists and brought to the deadly Citadel. Located on the half-destroyed volcanic world of Lolo Seyu, the Citadel was designed hundreds of years ago to hold Jedi who had lost their way. Now in the hands of the Separatists, the brutal warden, O.C. Sobeck, tortures Peel for the information. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker, and a crack team of clones are tasked with mounting a daring rescue. They are joined by R2-D2, who commands a trio of reprogrammed battle droids. And despite being told to stay behind, a defiant Ahsoka Tano also sneaks her way onto the mission. Landing at the Citadel, our heroes encounter multiple deadly traps. Clones perish, but the Jedi persist and rescue Evan Peel. The Lannik Jedi Master reveals he has only memorized half of the Nexus Route secrets. The other half are known only to the leader of his crew, Captain Wilhoff Tarkin. In a desperate attempt to escape, Obi-Wan and Anakin divide their forces. More clones die. Captain Tarkin criticizes pretty much everything, particularly the Jedi's refusal to be aggressive enough to achieve their objectives. Our heroes regroup at their escape shuttle, but it is under fire from Separatist forces. The ARC trooper Echo bravely attempts to take out the cannon preventing their takeoff, but he is caught in a massive explosion and presumed dead. Put a big Star Wars pin in that death. The Jedi Council sends a fleet to the rescue, but first our heroes must fight their way through the barren volcanic landscape to a small island. O.C. Sobeck releases deadly Anubas to track the Jedi. Distracted by fighting off a vicious crab droid, Jedi Master Evan Peel is mauled by an Anuba. He entrusts Ahsoka with the vital Nexus Route information before he passes away. After a brief ceremony to honor the fallen master, our heroes make it to the island. O.C. Sobeck intercepts Tarkin, ready to hurl him into the lava, but Ahsoka Tano arrives just in time to do what she must. She saves Tarkin and the Nexus Route information by stabbing Sobeck through the heart. Republic gunships sweep them all back to Coruscant, where Anakin and Obi-Wan are left to ponder the important question of the war. what will be lost if the Jedi continue to wage a war while honoring their code? The end for now. So there's the summary, Ken.
That is beautiful, wonderful stuff. So much intrigue. And these episodes have a lot of fun things and bad. I mean, you mentioned the Clone War death count is pretty high and brutal throughout this episode, but it's it leads to some wonderful depth, which is why we're here.
Yeah, a little bit of fun, death, and depth. That's what we come to the Clone Wars for. So what is your overall reaction? Do you love this arc? Do you like it? Do you struggle with it? What's your big picture?
Oh, man, I've always loved this one, plain and simple. I wouldn't even say it's underrated. I think it gets its proper due. And I think a lot of that is just the real in-your-face connections of Tarkin and the man who will become the monster Vader. I mean, it's all there for you to take in. And look, I can't help but be honest and see these as these three episodes is a bit of a palate cleanse after the two previous deeper arcs, which are wonderful. And I think the Night Sister arc is equally as powerful in my soul as the Mortis stuff. But a lot of deep thinking, a lot of like ruminating going on there. And this one just wants you to do all the deep thinking, but just like, let's go for a fun Star Wars serial adventure ride. Connects to the big state of the war, future of the galaxy ideas. And like we keep saying, it's just pretty damn exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I really love this arc. I think it always pops because they do a great job of raising the stakes of the Citadel and Tarkin, and a Jedi Master actually dies. They start explaining all those changed up seats between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. To see an actual Jedi Master die is a hell of a thing. So a lot of easy ways to remember this arc. But some of the things that I really loved about it is I just think the design is great. It's just really beautiful. That half destroyed volcanic planet, all of the yellow and purple contrast is just makes this pop. It's got yellow and purple, complementary colors, not used as much as, say, blue and orange or red and green, but really popular in like old pulp covers, old 40s, 50s paperbacks, that to create that sort of lurid look where one color is kind of dark and brooding with the purple and one is just kind of glaring in your face with the yellow. So I just love that design. I love sitting in that for three episodes. And I love that this is an arc that really embraces some of the tensions of Star Wars that we've been talking a lot about between the sort of the mythology and the adventure serial. And you keep calling this one fun, and I think it is. Because it does have this great, a lot of it is just adventure serial. They're getting attacked by a prison and a prison planet and constant adventure. One problem leads into the other. But at the same time, I feel like the deaths are put under a focus. Like sometimes in a Clone Wars episode, it's a battle and a clone falls and it's like, that's too bad. This one, I think you are meant to feel it on purpose, because it's on one hand, it's an adventure serial. And on the other hand, it's kind of this checkpoint for the horror of the war, right? Yeah. Like it's not subtle. The war is, and how the war should be fought is at stake. But the Citadel to me in these three episodes, it's a kind of a purgatory. And for me, it's kind of started to feel like a metaphor for the war itself. Yeah. You know, earlier episodes of the Clone Wars, the Jedi are certain that they can wrap this up quick. And we even see some Jedi make some kind of drastic choices to just try to put a button on it because they think they can. And now they're just in the middle of it and they're grinding through it and they kind of can't get through it. It's a maze of moral tunnels and constant death and cost. And like, that's all what's actually happening in this episode.
Yeah, I wrote down the note, the Citadel is life, man. Like, but I love connecting to the war, too. And that's why there's this philosophy deeply rooted in these episodes, for sure. Yeah, and each death, it just continues to build on the kind of the brutal nature of it. And we've talked a lot in the past about sometimes even the Jedi have that, like you said, there goes another one. But and there's some awkwardly funny moments I thought we'd have to deal with one of those moments. We'll talk about that.
But, yes, there is.
But it's in your face. Yeah, you're right, along the way. And this is, in terms of death, in terms of Peele's death, it's a great Star Wars death in a way. Like, what it means, the purpose, sacrifice, but also how it makes you feel with that shot of Ahsoka coming out of the end with him. So, I'm with you on that there. The purgatory of the Clone War.
Yeah, yeah. It is not subtle about the cost of the war, and is this worth it, right? The other thing for me is, like, in really watching this in the flow – Night Sisters and Mortis are both these bold arcs that introduce these kind of new vistas of looking at the Star Wars galaxy and looking at the force and the balance between light and dark and all these things. And it just kind of aesthetically, visually, it introduces a lot of new things. And you're right, they dive into kind of like the depth and the soul and the mythology. What I really was fascinated to see in the Citadel arc is I feel like it very much pulls everything back to what is the main spine of story going through the Clone Wars animated series. Clone Wars is in some ways an anthology series, but it's got this spine. And I feel like a couple of those specific points are really touched on. One is Ahsoka's growth. One is this central idea of, can Anakin let go of his Padawan? Yoda is explicit in the Clone Wars movie that's kind of the experiment of giving him a Padawan. They think he'll probably be a good, if unconventional, teacher. And the question is, will he be able to let go? That's what they're hoping to teach him by giving him a Padawan. We check in on that. And then also this big spine of the story of not how did the Jedi fall, not how did Anakin fall, but how did the Republic, the government, become the Empire? And I think it touches on all those kind of major through-line stories of the Clone Wars.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it. Dare I say, I said palate cleanse earlier, that's almost for myself. Not that I don't love the Mortis and Night Sisters arc, but yeah, a recentering. It's like when you wander too far off the Google map and you have to press a little button to get back to where your car actually is. I like looking at it that way, and it works. And it's I think that's one of the reasons over time, I've always said I've loved this arc because this is as advertised. I really like that point you made there.
Yeah. So it's been really fun on this rewatch to say like, okay, where are the foundation points to really buttress those main plot points, in particular Ahsoka's growth and the experiment of will this help Anakin or will this actually just make his issues worse? Yeah. So moving on to the morals of the episode, we got three episodes. So three morals. The first is adaptation is the key to survival. The second is anything that can go wrong will. Mm-hmm. And the final is without honor, victory is hollow. So which of those three spoke to you or any thoughts you wanted to share?
Like I said before, Citadel's life, man, I really look at just these morals and we're going to dive into the themes and the connections. These morals are real good going through life 101 type of self-help. I really think I looked at it that way of adaption is key to survival. That's, you know, growth versus stagnation. That's something that's always through Star Wars and it's always big. How this episode starts with lines like Anakin saying to R2, R2, make sure they don't stray from the flight plan. The clones unsure of working with the droids, kind of how that's a perspective they, without a doubt, I understand why they have that, where that comes from, but them not changing or struggling with the adaption of what's going on just in their own careers and lives here. And then, you know, I took anything that can go wrong. I looked at this idea of loosening up your grip on your path forward, which is interesting because we're going to focus on Anakin, who I think is really good at going with the flow or making up it as we go along. And, you know, this is what he does and he runs forward, but how it all still flows to what I think is one way that he wants to take everything, the way I kind of viewed it. So anyways, those ones jumped out, and without honor, victory is shallow, or apparently, as I put in my notes, swallow, which is also, you know, true as well. Swallow with honor, as I choke. I'm often one who chokes on his food, so it's a lesson there for me too. Anyways, powerful, simple, straightforward morals about how to move forward in life.
Yeah, I think that this arc in general is got some beautiful things to it, but it is very much on the surface. It's what the plot is about, what the characters say. There's not a lot of subtext. It is what it is, I think. And these morals really speak to some of the key ideas that we're going to talk about. For me, I think the one that I was affected by is the middle one of anything that can go wrong will. I just love looking at all the different morals put together, because some of them are like these deep wisdom. Some of them are a little bit surface level. Some of them are really inspirational. And I just like that this one is like, Well, this is just some hard knocks about life, kid. This goes into the moral category of suck it up, bucko. You got to accept that things are gonna go wrong, you know, and I just like how direct it is. Anything that can go wrong will. Deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Lots of different kinds of advice in these morals.
Try being a professional podcaster in Hollywood. Every day you're going to have to adapt and let go of what you think's going to happen tomorrow.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, because I'm kind of joking. And obviously, what flows from anything that can go wrong well is so learn to adapt. And that's the moral of the first episode, yeah. Adaptation is the key to survival. I just like that it's stated as just blunt. It doesn't have that back half of anything that can go wrong will, so be ready to adjust. Like it's missing that back half, so it's just like well, it's so funny. Life sucks. Stop whining.
Somebody said it. So when I start always, you know, putting together my notes, I do go to Wikipedia, then I link to the old articles that the wonderful Kristen Baver had done for StarWars.com, which is the episode guides. Those link to the featurettes, and I know you do the same thing as well, Joseph.
I don't always have time to watch the featurettes. I didn't this week, so if something comes up, please let me know.
Oh yeah. You get to see Steven Stanton with hair. Hey Steven, love you. but she always, that's where I kind of write down the morals in one spot, right? If we're doing multiple arcs. And I was like, this is an old link. Is it wrong? Like the sentence just stopped there. So very funny that you pointed that out.
Yeah. Anything that can go wrong will. I'm going to put that inspirational phrase under my pillow at night. Even sleeping can go wrong, and it will. Anyway, let's move on because there are some uplifting messages, I think, or at least some really good things to think about. For you, I think there are a couple of big ideas in this. I think we're probably both going to want to talk about the idea of adapting, right? Because that's so crystal clear. So maybe let's just go to that big idea first.
Okay.
What are your thoughts about what this has to say about adapting in its value? You know, how do you think that's supported? And what do you think is being really said?
One word, growth, right? And I guess you could take that in a lot of different spots in terms of the Jedi and all those kind of things. This idea of Ahsoka not supposed to be there. We're going to get into what I believe that, you know, says about fear-based attachment, all the things related to Anakin. But I really love this idea of growth and being where you need to be and growing to match the ever-changing path in front of you. This is a life lesson for me. We can, you know, not even talk about Clone Wars at this point. About everything that's come before is led you to this moment, and it's never going to be necessarily what you wanted, what you thought, what you planned out, and letting go of that and adaptation is nothing but growth to me. Some could see it as adapting is, it maybe can back up on your principles. And there's an interesting Tarkin quote. I was even going to just ask you and toss it to you later on, but I'm going to bring it up now where Tarkin, in discussing stuff later on with Anakin, I stand with my principles no matter what. On paper, that's something I think you and I, maybe many Star Wars people, were like, oh, that's a good line. Yeah. Find your principles and stand strong. But it's Tarkin. and what does that say about just, you know, being so rigid and you love, you know, this concept of rigid and flowing in Star Wars, right? It's so there all the time. So anyways, I start there with this big idea of what growth, adaption being growth, and how important it is to just kind of let you loosen that grip on what you think really needs to happen and what you're trying to do.
Yeah, no, I think there are so many great thoughts there. I think with Tarkin, that rigidity that he shows, right, of make a plan, it will be good, stick to it. That obviously works for him a lot. But when he's like, I stick to my beliefs no matter what, you know, smash cut to evacuate now in our moment of triumph.
Oh, my gosh.
A little less rigidity and a little more imagination would have saved his life.
I wrote an essay on that. It's so almost to a point of comedy of right. Like there's so much of him along the way of just like plan B. I'm just like, hey, there's your death right there, buddy.
Yeah. I think for me, and this isn't necessarily super wrestled with in the episode. I think it's the sort of the paths are opened up and then you can follow them. But it's something I think about a lot in Star Wars storytelling, but also other storytelling about this. That those kind of statements that sound good and sound right and sound heroic of stick to your convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what Star Wars argues for is Be flexible, be flowing, question your beliefs and your stances. And after questioning them, after looking at them from multiple points of view, if you are still certain, then plant your flag, you know? And I think that's good wisdom for myself for real life. I kind of think some of the best wisdom is not every bit of wisdom is going to apply to every situation.
Right.
And I think that's like often the story of the Jedi when they wrestle with their inaction of that's them questioning their stance. And then it's often a younger character who brings the older characters who are having doubt and questioning things, bringing them back to like, yeah, but remember this basic stance of our conviction in our purpose is to be the light and to stand between aggression and violence and people who don't have power. And it's easy to lose that conviction, but let's not lose that conviction. And that's like a tested conviction, right?
Yeah.
Unlike Tarkin, who just feels a little like rigid of like, I have my perspective from the way I was raised.
Yeah.
It is correct. Everyone else is wrong. And I don't question my perspective. And, you know, never mind, we could get into how his perspective is, especially as we learn from the Tarkin novel. But even without it, his perspective is about power is everything, you know, and the most powerful should be putting their boot on the less powerful and everybody should get out of my way. And if there's a problem, just use more power. Right. I mean,
which
he just expresses in this episode of like, if there is there a problem, attack it with the most force possible.
Yeah. Strength in numbers is something. It's it's an interesting thing to tie to some of the bigger stuff. I'm jumping all over the map, but I just see Tarkin, his arms folded, right? The entire time. No openness. This is just, nope, this is the way it is.
Tarkin, his arms folded. That's like the Star Trek episode where everybody talks like that in parables. but I do think what you're talking about does come back to this big idea of adaptation, which is absolutely central to this arc, right? Mm-hmm. That we see the characters constantly in a state where it wouldn't help them to be rigid because the situations are changing around them constantly. Yeah. So they are firm in their conviction that Master Peel needs to be rescued, that these that this Nexus route is really important. You know, maybe the Jedi should be questioning those things more, but they aren't. But they are firm in those beliefs. And then they're saying, like, how we're going to accomplish those beliefs, we have to accept a little bit of the unknown and we have to adapt. Like, I think it starts from the very beginning where at the briefing, the Jedi are like, we only have very old records of the Citadel and we kind of have to accept that it's a crude map and it may not be right. And you might not have to change when you get there. Right.
Yeah.
And then, Ahsoka wasn't planned to be there, but she's what they need to get through the ventilation ducts. You know, Anakin even challenges Tarkin and says, it's when things don't go as planned that we Jedi are at our best. Right. One of the battle droids, the reprogrammed battle droids, when Obi-Wan isn't where he's supposed to be, the battle droids say we'll have to improvise. So droids are more flexible than Tarkin, it all builds to what Master Peel just directly says to Ahsoka of whether you were meant to be on this mission or not, you are now the most important part of it, you know, of really what you're saying. I think it's about the story of Star Wars. It's about the Jedi philosophy, but it is, I think, this real life lesson of, you know, you have to be, it's about letting go of what you can't control too. Right. And saying, I had planned my day to go this way, but these things that I cannot control changed the nature of my day. So I could be furious about it, or I could just try to bulldoze through it, or I could adapt to it and maybe see, maybe some of these changes are a gift. Maybe it's still a crisis, but I clearly can't go left anymore. So maybe I should be open to going right. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. Love all that stuff there. And cause I have this thought of, and again, I'm not even saying, to you now that I think this is 100% accurate of Anakin, but I wrote down the note of Anakin is great at adapting, but he can't let go of the idea of control in his life through ultimate, just complete victory. And that, which speaks now to how you fight and the honor stuff starts coming into my head too with him, but how that rolls right into Tarkin's kind of view of the end game. And total annihilation victory, which leads to strength, oppression through strength in numbers, and then also making sure your enemies can't unite, which is something the Rebel Alliance. Anyways, it was all interesting layered from going from that following Anakin's path forward and what he struggles with and how sometimes what might be his strength could also be what hurts him.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a really great story of Anakin and the way he is, one of the ways that he is fleshed out so beautifully in the Clone Wars animated series is that he is very flexible and very intuitive in from moment to moment in terms of like getting through a battle, but he's extremely inflexible about the big picture things, right? And wants to make everything as simple as possible. So if the goal is win this battle, he is not moving from that, but he's very intuitive within it.
I don't know why I just really focused on this idea of Anakin. Just again, when I say complete victory, that's kind of a control, right? Complete annihilation or whatever it is. And how, you know, you always say that Anakin has that simplistic need to just be like, let me fix it. This is how we fix it. We wipe it all out. And life's going to throw these lessons at you of adaption and growth. And Anakin doesn't necessarily see that winning is not always a mission. It could be survival, just moving on, protection, defense, those big Jedi concepts. That he's often willing to lay down for what his concept of success and victory is, and how that just immediately flows into Tarkin's ideas too. I think that was wonderfully highlighted and dangerous for Anakin.
Yeah, absolutely. Final thing for me on this big idea of adaptation, and you know, it flows into the other things we're going to talk about. But I would really like that this 3-episode arc. A lot happens in the first episode. A lot happens in the third episode. Ideas happen in the second episode, but the second episode is fascinating because they do just feel kind of like stuck in the maze of the Citadel, you know?
Yeah.
You know, coming together, splitting up, coming together, more problems. So it makes, in some ways, there's a part of me that wants to go like, could this have been 2 episodes? But I think that second episode of just stuck in the different paths, it feels like a part of the point of this arc, that the Citadel itself becomes kind of this metaphor for a situation in which you absolutely need to adapt. There's multiple paths through this incredibly difficult place, and you have to be open to trying all these different paths to get to where you want to go.
Look, this is why I get upset when someone tells me Lord of the Rings films are just a bunch of people walking for 3 movies. Funny joke. I get it. But it's the lessons on the journey, right? And yes, so I keep going back to Citadel's life. You're talking about, you know, analogy for the war that they're all stuck in. Yeah, and how it felt claustrophobic, right? And at one point where there's like, we can't get out. Like, this is what it was built for. And Tarkin's like, yeah, it was. This is kind of nice.
Very beautiful.
I feel you on that second episode.
Yeah. So it works for me on an emotional level. It made me feel it. Let's move on then to some other ideas. What did you feel like were some of the other big ideas of this arc?
I want to go back to this fear-based attachment stuff, beginning with Anakin and just this holding back of Ahsoka. Perhaps I have a legit concern. I think there's some emotional canon connections to the Omega stuff with Hunter, right? Mm-hmm. Same vibe. We're even back then reviewing the Bad Batch, where I was like, look, I'm going to defend Hunter a little bit. She's a 12-year-old girl, whatever he thinks at that point, kid, whatever you want to, and you know, Omega might be older, and who knows, could even be her mother. We don't know yet. But even in that situation, Hunter's going to be like, this doesn't seem the right spot for you to be in. I understand where that comes from, but when you put that before, and we talk about different versions of attachment or holding on, compassion, all those things, and just the fear-based one and how Anakin just is trying to control the situation, and Ahsoka just pretty directly talks about her agency being removed, and this is not the purpose of his role as a teacher in her life. And I thought it was great. That was a great quote. It's not for him to decide when and how I could put my life in danger. That should be my choice. And I think that's a great way to look, even though it's tough, a great way to look at parenting, coaching, mentoring, whatever it is. Sue LaQuane's a very important line now that just keeps growing importance, doesn't it? From Mad Max, just, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but kids, they're going to get hurt. That's part of it.
Yep, they're gonna take risks, and you're supposed to be there for them. Yeah, I always think about this difference between fear and concern, right? There's like legitimate concern, right? If you know, if you said to me, "Hey, you know what? I think I'm gonna record my podcast in the middle of the freeway," that would be like I would have legitimate concern for my friend, right?
Yeah.
But if I just got the vague sense that you were gonna do something dangerous, so I tried to convince you to stay home, that's fear, right?
Yeah.
And yep, they're going to a dangerous place. Maybe Anakin has a leg to stand on of this mission's a little bit too dangerous for you, but it feels like that it is Anakin being overprotective, as Ahsoka says. Ahsoka says to him, "You're just being protective again. How am I supposed to learn if you won't let me share the risk?" So there's a lot about agency, but I also just really feel like it's about really checking in on Ahsoka's journey, right? Mm-hmm. That she's learned a lot of things from Anakin. She's learned, they've bonded over, they're both really compassionate. They care about others and they don't want to leave people behind. She says to him, paraphrasing, because I didn't write this quote down, about like, "Well, I've learned from you that maybe following the rules isn't always the best way to get things done." So she's gathering all of this good mentorship from Anakin. Yeah. And then he is really like kind of trying to control her and hold her back and not let her use the skills that he has taught her. Yeah. So I think it's absolutely what you're saying about fear. But I also just think that so much of this arc is just checking in with Ahsoka's journey of her pushing back and going, "Yeah, no, thanks for all the teaching and help. And I love you, Master, but I want to make my own choices."
Yeah.
You know, and then we get to that point where Tarkin doubts her and says, "You know, I'm concerned that the Jedi have elected this child to lead the group." And it's really significant to me that Ahsoka ends up doing all of the important, valuable stuff at the end of the mission, right? She gets the information and memorizes it and carries it and completes Master Peel's mission. And she is the one who saves Tarkin, doing exactly what he complained the Jedi were not willing to do. She just straight up murders Osi Sobek because she's clear on she is saving Tarkin's life. She is saving the mission and this information, right? So I feel like it's also, you know, I wouldn't even call it a theme. It's the plot.
Yeah.
It's the narrative. This is showing us how Ahsoka is taking the best from Anakin and how Ahsoka is on this path to be a sort of true and good Jedi, making good choices of her own and building to the place where she makes the right choice for her, seeing the dysfunction of the Jedi Council and walking away.
Yeah. Building to that, absolutely. I love button up against Anakin is just a large example, perhaps Jedi Order, you know, on a small scale. But yeah, no, I really love that. And the dangers of what she is picking up, you know, the connections to the Tal Merrick death. Even I love Tarkin pointing out that, "Oh, you've trained her well." Like, uh-oh. but a good Ahsoka check-in, as you're calling it there. And you're right, from sneaking into the ventilation shaft to the kill at the end, Ahsoka saves the day again.
Yeah, it's part of that adaptation theme of like, look, we didn't plan for her to be here, but now that she is, well, maybe that's a good thing, you know? So there's a lot of that, but it's also just really about Ahsoka kind of being on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you about the end, because there's an interesting thing here where Ahsoka just admits to Evan or Evan Peel that she's like, "I lied to get on this mission. I wasn't supposed to be here." And Peel really validates her of like, "Yeah, stuff changes."
Yeah.
And you are now on the mission and you're the most important part of it. So she says that she lied when she said that Plo Koon told her to go on the mission. And then when Plo Koon gets confronted about it at the end of the episode, Plo Koon validates her and backs her up. So my question for you, Ken, is what do you think is going on with Plo Koon there? Obviously, he has a relationship with little Soka. He's the one who found her and they have a bond. But what do you make of Jedi Master Plo Koon bending the rules by backing up Ahsoka's lie?
First of all, to lie is to be human, right? potential Padme bit of advice. I love what you say. I think I go back to even the beginning of the episode where Plo Koon is just like, "Oh, you and Anakin have a lot to talk about." Like, he's just going to maybe...
Not my problem.
Yeah, but he's maybe going to let Anakin see, almost like to see where Anakin is falling down on this. I think Plo Koon might have a point of view of she should be there. But how this is maybe, I don't want to say test for both of them, but just like, almost like Plo Koon's like, let's see what Anakin comes up with. Let's see what he does. All right. He said she's not on the mission, but all right, we'll see how that goes. And so at the end, kind of invalidating Ahsoka being there, maybe washing away the lie a little bit, but it almost like he looks at Anakin and is like, "Huh? Huh? What do you think about that? You know, maybe let her on next time. Maybe consider more closely your actions as a mentor with her."
Yeah. Or, you know, is it that, you know, that scene cuts away where she makes the argument to Plo Koon that she should be able to make the choice about whether or not she risks her life. And we don't hear what Plo Koon says, you know? So does Plo Koon feel like, well, by not saying anything, I was agreeing with her that it is her choice, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, there is that real explicit conversation. I believe Plo Koon is still there when Ahsoka is telling Anakin, well, I learned that, you know, bending the rules from you is sometimes a good thing. And it seems almost like Plo Koon's like, yes, every once in a while. Bend the rules.
Now, look, this all changes. If Ahsoka dies 2 minutes into the mission, then I'd love to go back and get Plo Koon's advice. But you know what? That's a what if we don't need to deal with.
It sure is a what if. Absolutely. Any other thoughts on that element of the episode?
No.
Cool. So last big idea that I wanted to talk about, and feel free to throw anything that you want out as well, is I feel like especially that last moral, without honor, victory is hollow. Some of the explicit conversations between Tarkin and Anakin, and Anakin and Obi-Wan at the end of the whole arc. For me, like, the big idea of this is how we fight, right? That's what's really, it's checking in on the Jedi's relationship to this war. For me, this is a little bit of getting into kind of how Tarkin is such a symbol of, remember, the Republic becomes the Empire. They don't get defeated. The Republic becomes the Empire. And some of these imperialistic ideas are already embedded with our heroes, which really gets into all these ideas of not only this big Jedi picture of not only what we do matters, but how we go about doing it matters. So for me, a couple of the ways that this is really highlighted, right at the beginning, when Obi-Wan and Tarkin butt heads of, Obi-Wan wants to split up, the group. It's really, Obi-Wan is approaching this from the mission, the core of the mission. The heart of the mission is, you know, we need to get this Nexus Root information back, or if not, we need to really make sure that the Separatists don't get it. So Obi-Wan, I think, really pursuing this in this, like, selfless, hey, if I don't make it, that's fine. Got to split up. And Tarkin just wants to stick together, you know, and this is his superior force speech of, like, yeah, you know, we shall be a large hammer and hit them all. Like, it's so, you know, aggressive. And then there's the back and forth, early back and forth with Tarkin and Anakin. Tarkin saying, I reserve my trust for those who take action, General Skywalker. Really, really fighting for this idea of everything should be aggressive. That's the way it works. And Tarkin also really expresses this lack of faith in the Jedi based on how they are conducting the war. He says, I find their tactics ineffective. The Jedi code prevents them from going far enough to achieve victory, to do whatever it takes to win. The very reason peacekeepers should not be leading a war. Anakin kind of agrees. I've also found that we sometimes fall short of victory because of our methods. So there's this huge idea that's really laid out explicitly between the debates of how to handle what's actually going on in the Citadel escape, in the general picture of the war. We already talked a little bit about how Ahsoka kind of has this interesting demonstration of, like, we don't always hold back. Sometimes when we do what we absolutely must by, you know, killing Osi Sobek, and then all of it really just gets framed by these final bits of dialogue between Anakin and Obi-Wan, where Anakin says, if we aren't willing to do what it takes to win, we risk losing everything we tried to protect. And Obi-Wan says, unfortunately, war tends to distort our point of view. If we sacrifice our code, even for victory, we may lose that which is most important, our honor. So I feel like for me, this big picture discussion is the Jedi are willing to wage this war, but they're still going to try to wage it from a perspective of ultimately what we're doing is defending the Republic from the Separatists. Which means we kind of got to attack the Separatists to stop them. But we're going to try to keep everything from the perspective of defense, even though tactically sometimes we have to be aggressive. And you've got the sort of Tarkin and Anakin perspective of, like, it's a war. Our goal is to crush the enemy, and we shouldn't let anything hold us back from that.
Yeah, this is great. I put down the note, the Republic now, the Empire then, and how it all flows into that. And I love connecting this stuff to any conversations around Andor, Saw Gerrera, just the upstart rebels. What's the cost? What is it all worth it? For Andor, it's a different view on it, but Saw, that quote from Saw, the Empire considers both of us criminals, at least I act like one, which sounds really cool. I kind of get it. But then also, what does that lead to? We know with Saw. So yeah, to see that all flow out of this concept of honor, which comes up a lot in Star Wars, right? Which it's a big theme, an important theme. And again, going to this idea of complete victory for Anakin, I always go back to that of just like what that means to him versus everyone else.
Yeah. And I think for me, it really gets into like the heart of, you know, that little bit of, ooh, Tarkin says the very reason peacekeepers should not be leading a war. Like, we don't want to agree with Tarkin in the big picture because Tarkin's perspective is everything should be aggression and power is all that matters. And I have power and I should use it and I should be the leader.
Yeah.
But then there's that part where you're like, ooh, the reason peacekeepers should not be leading a war. That is the story of the Jedi in the Clone Wars, right? They shouldn't be leading this war. They are taking a kind of half measure that they've been duped into. And Obi-Wan, I think, being the sort of the company Jedi, not that he doesn't question things, is really saying, like, I think we can do this. I think we can ride the line. I think we can, in our interactions, do what we must, but still follow our code and not give in to violence or anger or is in many times as possible in these battles, come at them from a defensive perspective. And that is noble, but we see as the Clone Wars go on, it isn't effective, right? It plays into the Sith's hands and it lets them prolong the war.
Yeah, it's whittling down who they are. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and to see, and then even to tie it in with, again, to analyze Ahsoka's actions at the end, I would argue, point to Ahsoka, but the bigger picture, when you make Tarkin happy, I worry.
Right. But in the sort of the Jedi code, right? I mean, she's saving Tarkin.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, okay, maybe she could have tried to cut off his legs, I guess. I don't know. But it is a definitive action. And there's a lot of great storytelling, even in the High Republic with that. And many other places where once a Jedi has decided like, well, unfortunately, I've given you every option out. Unfortunately, in order to defend others, I need to take you out. But it's also important to do it from a place of I'm very calm about this. I'm very clear. It's defense. It's not rage. It's not a desire for power. And maybe that's what's really at play is it feels like Anakin wants to unleash not just to win the war because that's tactically sound. It's because he wants to unleash everything and he wants to feel that control that you're talking about. And that's what, even more than sort of nitpicking, could have Ahsoka cut off his legs. Right. It's more about that. What's in your heart when you take this action? Cause that's going to determine your next action.
I think intention. I think that's where I would fall in this. Cause I would say, I think Ahsoka did right here, but again, what does she do tomorrow? Right. When she says this choice again, is she going to analyze it? Is she going to do what you're talking about? What they highlight so well in the High Republic of each death, each life a Jedi takes hurts them in a way, right? It sticks with them. They feel it. They know it. It's not a light decision. I don't know if Anakin had taken that shot here in this episode. We know we did the Tal Merrick one earlier too, but like it might have been a high five and let's get a drink.
Yeah, you get the sense that Ahsoka probably thinks about that and weighs that, and Anakin wouldn't. He would have just, hey, he had to die. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other big picture themes or ideas or more thoughts on this one?
No, absolutely. No, we can tie it into the big picture too.
Awesome. Let's talk the big picture. We can kind of drift it into it already, but let's talk about how the ideas in this arc reflect larger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars. What do you have for that?
So I'm going to go to this one first. It's still probably some more stuff to talk about the Republic and the Jedi and their relationship, which is sometimes a little tense. I love this idea of this. Again, going to Citadel's life, man. I'm going to get that T-shirt because I say it a lot here in this episode. But this idea of this episode is a continued just rollout of choices. And you and I love talking destiny and choices and all that kind of stuff. A plan often represents one set of pre-selected choices, but destiny is going to keep giving you a lot more. And that's how you learn more about yourself with each choice you make. And I think every time this fun of this episode is this totally like, well, we got here. We can't take jetpacks. We got to climb. And then you got more choices and more actions and more lefts and rights to go. I think that's just Star Wars putting it all in a nutshell for us here of how do you survive this? How do you get out? What is the goal? And how do you want to do it? Because you are you are going to continue to have, and then to have choices. And once you make a choice, this is what I was going saying with Ahsoka a little bit. Great. You just stabbed Sobchak in the back with the lightsaber and saved the day. What are you going to do tomorrow with that choice? And how do you build on the choices? And I think this ties into some big things in life, and bad things can happen to you. And you are justified in your feelings and your anger and your rage toward those bad things. How you deal with it and carry that forward is the next choice you're going to have, and the next choice, and the next choice. And I just love Star Wars kind of putting it all into one wonderful little fun and brutal arc.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we're going to get a little bit next episode from what Ahsoka does next, which is really fun. So for me, some of the big picture stuff, I do think it really does tie into Anakin's need to keep things simple and direct and fixable. Obviously, he is very intuitive and able to adapt beat to beat in a battle. but in the big picture, you know, he is still kind of really demonstrating the if it's a friend, save it. If it's an enemy, kill it, period. And everybody's a friend and an enemy, and there isn't, you know, much gray area. And even when he expresses to Obi-Wan that he thinks Tarkin's got some great points and says, you know, the Jedi code doesn't let us achieve victory, Obi-Wan says to him, a rather simple point of view.
Yeah.
Not only a classic Obi-Wan line, but kind of challenging that perspective of Anakin, who's wanting to keep things really, really simple. There are the good guys and the bad guys, and save the good guys no matter what, kill the bad guys, period.
As you're talking, I'm thinking of some Attack of the Clones conversations with Anakin and Obi-Wan when, you know, they're here to guard Padme, and Anakin's like, well, it's implied that we're going to go find out who did this and kill them, right? Come on.
Yeah. And Obi-Wan is always open to those points of view, except for when he has made his choice, which he does sometimes. We talked a lot about this kind of the Jedi's half measure approach to the war. I think that does pop up a lot in individual Clone Wars episodes where we see sort of demonstrations of that. We see Anakin pushing back on that, and sometimes Anakin achieves a result, but clearly does some damage to his soul along the way. When he needs to rescue Ahsoka in the brainworms arc and just straight up tortures somebody and manages to hide it from everyone, you know? Mm-hmm. So we definitely see some examples of what is lost. But then also we see the big picture of the Jedi's sort of half measure approach to this war only ends up serving Palpatine. And then I really like that there's just that beat, that reminder at the end that there is this great tension between the Jedi Council and the in Palpatine's Republic, soon to be Empire, mm-hmm. where this great idea that Master Peel has of splitting up the codes ends up being the source of tension when Tarkin's like, I will only give them to Palpatine.
Yeah.
And Ahsoka's like, I was told by Master Peel to only give them to Jedi Council. And it's kind of not resolved. It's just Yoda says like, well, I'll go talk to Palpatine.
Yeah. This is the taste great, less filling argument in Star Wars right here. I wrote this note of the Jedi versus the Republic at the very end. And Palpatine, when we say the Republic, but absolutely important to note. And there was this version of the ending. This is something that I did pick up in the featurette that they had this idea of Tarkin is the one that shot our guy Sobchak in the back, and it was kind of this example of the Republic will do anything to win, and the Jedi see it, but Lucas nixed it because he thought it made the Jedi look really dumb. They're just all there in front of them. And I like this change. I like it. I like how it means more for Ahsoka, which is an overall important thing to the Clone Wars. And then how it kind of, now Jedi are still dealing with this. And no one can go, hey, remember when Tarkin did that? Now, yeah, you're right. No, now it just has this, it's this layered stuff there. So I really like that ending. And thought it was a good choice by that guy named George.
Yeah, great choice, George. Yeah, because I also think that especially when you listen to some of the things that Lucas says, I don't think Lucas... it doesn't appear to me from his storytelling that Lucas is advocating inaction from the Jedi, right? He's mm-hmm. advocating the best choices if possible, mm-hmm. but I don't think he's ever really advocating just don't do anything.
Yeah.
So to see Ahsoka manage to take the action, but seem to take the action in a way that isn't corruptive to her soul is powerful.
Yeah, well, and this idea of power, you hear of, you know, think of all the things George always says and those clips that sneak out and go viral and viral again, like they're all brand new, of just like that greed and the power. And Yeah, and you get that sense that if when Anakin does this kind of stuff, that is another notch on the power belt. He ain't ready to give up. He's only ready to build on, which works very nicely from someone like Tarkin, who's all about strength and numbers, which also means separating any opposition from having their own numbers. And just, you know, you start to see that dark path start to form.
Yeah, absolutely. Final thing for me, that it was just fun to watch this and see, it's so easy to focus on Tarkin's criticism of Ahsoka, to focus on like the literal handshake between future Moff and future Sith, mm-hmm. you know, to see like that relationship between Tarkin and Vader is such a big deal in A New Hope, and to see the beginnings of that is really powerful. But then for me, it's easy to forget like, yeah, but Tarkin and Obi-Wan butt heads a lot. And then you go to that line in A New Hope where Tarkin's like, Obi-Wan, he must be dead by now. Like, remember, like, they interacted and Tarkin did not think much of Obi-Wan at all.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been awesome. Yeah. Let's remake episode 4 with some new lines about, remember him on the Citadel? He was a stupid dum-dum.
Terrible plans. He would have died without you. Yeah. All right. Unless you have any other thoughts, let's take a quick break and then we'll get back into some of the fun details of the Citadel arc.
Oh, great stuff. Let's roll on. Let's adapt and roll on.
Adapt and roll on. We'll be right back. Please adapt to this message. And we are back to finish our discussion of the big arc of the Citadel. Is it purgatory? Is it life? Is it just a big prison on a volcano planet? You decide. We're going to talk some favorite action moments. This is a good adventure serial arc. Ken, what were some of your favorite action moments?
Yeah, there's a lot if you like droids dying and clones being cut in two. I just start with the free climb scene where they're have to climb that wall, and just great tension. I also have such a fear of falling in my life from heights, which I guess technically means I have a fear of heights, but I like being high up. I like vistas that I can look out on the valley down below. Wake up in a cold sweat from dreams of falling. Who enjoys falling? So this is a lot of tension for me, and it's wonderfully visual, which I also include that droidica just popping out, and, you know, just patrolling, just popping out. What's going on out here? Nothing. All right. The whole sequence was fun for me.
Yeah, no, that was the first one I wrote down too. Of the aesthetics of it are just beautiful, and it's just a great adventure serial of like, what do our heroes have to do? Free climb a rock wall, avoiding electro mines that shoot out purple lightning. It's just great, and then it builds to that great tension of the first Death Charger falling into an electro mine. Very very sad. Rest in peace. Charger. Yeah, so that one was great. What was next for you?
There's one point where these security droids, the commando kind of droids, pop in there, and they enter the battle like gymnasts. Like they all like flip in there and do, you know, somersalts. And it was both beautiful and flowing, and also unintentionally comedic for me as well. But I just like that. It was in terms of, you know, is it Maul entering the battle in Phantom Menace, those doors opening in the music cue? No, but it's also a great entry into a battle.
Yeah, the commando droids are so great. They're so terrifying. They're well designed to understand why they're a little bit tougher for the Jedi to deal with. Yep. Not too tough once the Jedi close ranks in that, but all the bendy, twisty, they're 10-point Olympic landings are hilarious. I really love the magnetized hallway battle.
Yes.
Like, great that it pulls the weapons away. That makes sense. And then in this arc that is dealing with Anakin, I love the twist that, you know, his arm, if you want to take that as a symbol of his aggression, gets him stuck to the wall and is shocked. And then I love when they are trying to force push the commando droids and they're only half pushed over, and it's more a battle of like, keep them pushed over so they can't shoot us. It's so great.
Now, there's a great, I love when even Peel and Kenobi kind of look at each other like, double push? Yeah, double push.
Yeah. And in that little battle, when Anakin hacks something in the ceiling to turn off the magnetized effect, there's some just great quick hacking. of the droids. But Obi-Wan does this behind the backstab, which he's got one in The Phantom Menace. And that was featured in the video game for the PS1 called Jedi Power Battles. Mm. And it was a complicated Mortal Kombat, like hit these 8 buttons. Mm. I played that video game for hours just trying to line up a behind the back Obi-Wan Kenobi stab because I thought it was so cool. And every once in a while I'd line it up perfectly. And a lot of times you just miss by just a little bit. So it just looked like Obi-Wan Kenobi was dancing. So I had to shout that out because it's one of my favorite Obi-Wan moves, and it was really cool to see it here.
Love it. Love it. I enjoyed there's a moment in that one of those hallway battles there where a clone just kind of says enough and shoulder tackles a security droid, commando droid. Just like, it's a great little sound effect, great moment.
Yeah, absolutely great. I think this might be the thing you were talking about. In the second episode when the commando droids have their shields, which are really cool. There's one image of them suddenly appearing in the tunnels and a lot of hopping with shields. And it was funny and scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Just very.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like they're part of the Ocean's 11 team to get into a casino. They're just great gymnasts just kind of flowing in.
Yeah. Another one for me is not a specific moment, but a culmination of the sheer amount of Jedi jumping on Staps, the single trooper aerial platform, kicking one off, taking the Stap, and then shooting down or stabbing the others on Staps. You would think at some point, like Anakin did this in the Clone Wars movie, you would think at some point the Separatists would kind of look at some of their battle records and go, we just shouldn't send those into battle against Jedi. Yeah. They just kick a droid off and take it.
Yeah, seems pretty easy. Yeah, I just wrote stab action with many exclamation points all the way through it. Good stabbing, good jumping, good leaving. But yeah, you're right. One of those, I guess even the battle droids themselves, not super effective over time in some of our big battles in Star Wars. But the stabs are cool, though. They sound cool. They look cool. I loved them in the trailer for Phantom Menace, but maybe I wouldn't fight with them.
Yeah, no, they're clearly not effective against Jedi. I think there's one moment where Master Peel jumps on Anakin's shoulders.
Yes.
That's great. I have one more action moment. Do you have more?
I just have some general ones about Echo's act of bravery. The droids themselves that are working with R2, they have a great moment of bravery that's kind of sad in some way. So some of that kind of stuff. Oh, R2 shocks one of the commando droids. I thought that was cool.
Oh, yeah, that was nice. And I do like the sad battle droid moment where they come up with a great plan of like, hold them off. It's like, it's 3B1 battle droids. Against like crab droids and commando droids and staps and I think B2 battle droids, and like they're so brave and they just immediately die.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sad. Last one for me is the Anuba tearing up Even Peel.
yeah.
I didn't super enjoy some of the action beats with the Anuba. You know, we've talked about it a lot of Star Wars is ongoing and changing relationship with violence against animals, the creatures of the galaxy. Mm. So maybe we'll talk about that later, but I really did like, I think that's such a big deal of this episode to see a master die, right? That the cost of the war isn't just clones. It is a master on the council, right?
Yeah.
And that it isn't this like, kind of amazing thing where, you know, it's not like Kanan, great that he right, should go out with such honor, right? But it's such a beautiful emotional moment. It's such a choice. It's like Master Peel is just busy taking care of a crab droid and gets mauled by a vicious animal because he's just not on top of it, right? And it takes the Jedi down a notch. I can see maybe some fans not thinking a Jedi shouldn't be able to go out like that, but it does kind of speak to the limits of their power, and I like seeing that they can die a lot of ways, and it's just brutal. You just feel it.
Yeah, a lot of brutality all through this. I mean, subject assassinating, murdering that droid, that clone, excuse me, just shooting him in the head and all this stuff. Yeah, it keeps in line with it. And this episode has a lot of high stakes. They keep talking about kind of the fate of the war. Whoever gets these hyperspace routes, there's high stakes that we'll start controlling the war. And so I think this is just simply one of those. Hey. Don't forget, people can go just because you might have loved them from Phantom Menace and thought they were Yoda's cousin. No, they can die.
Yeah, yeah. So you liked the death of Master Peel?
I do. It's always effective. And just the image of it's really sad. And when Obi-Wan's like, oh, no. And like, you know, Ahsoka comes walking with him draped over her shoulder, and Anakin takes him. Like, again, in terms of Star Wars deaths, it's one that you can remember and kind of cuts deep. And it's great. Any great is these three episodes to kind of come back and have a moment in the sun for Star Wars fans. But no, I think it absolutely works.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, yeah, canon wise, it's just really fun to see. Any other action moments before we move on?
One final one. And it is Evan Peele. There's a great moment where he slices a crab droid and he like leaps over it and then goes underneath and he slices in two with his lightsaber, but slowly. Like there's some tension and like he has to like force it through. Like he's trying to open up a package. It's like he's trying to get to the CD player, like or CD that he bought at Best Buy. He's like, got it. And I really like that. And one of those good moments to see Evan Peele in action.
Yeah. I want to make a special version of that where it's like a pinata and some candy comes out. So
exactly.
Master Peele gets something for it. Rest in peace, Master Peele. Let's move on then to moments of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness. There are definitely some comedy beats, but a lot of things that made me laugh are a little bit more dark, wry irony.
Yeah.
The first thing that made me laugh in the first episode is, I believe it is Fives, the clone Fives, who says about the B1 battle droids, "We're trusting those droids to get us into the Citadel." Which for me is just kind of a nice payoff of this weird role that the battle droids play, where every once in a while we see them as these ominous, overwhelming terrors that, you know, shoot down clones. But often they're these hapless comedy droids. So it's fun to see that from Five's perspective of like those idiots.
Well, yeah. And I said earlier, you know, they're maybe overall ineffective, but we also know that, you know, they do some damage over the course of the war. That's why they're still kind of a threat. But I love what you're saying there. And just again, going with the big theme of like, yeah, yep, you're going to have to be friends with them. You're going to have to make it work.
Yep. You're going to have to adapt to these idiots. And they're portrayed as so brave and resourceful and ready to adapt themselves. What are some moments for you?
Well, I didn't read any quotes, but just the whole scene with like 3PO really being put out by R2 having droids under his command. Like he just like jealousy, professional jealousy, friendship. I don't know. A lot of things that work there with their relationship. But I love that moment. R2 just kind of acting as always like, well, yeah, I'm R2. I'm serving drinks. I'm commanding droids. What do you got?
I'm on top of things. I got places to go. Let's do this, 3PO. Yeah, I like the R2 behind you. Like R2 doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Very good worrywart stuff. Classic Obi-Wan line when I think I've seen people gift this and celebrate it. He is in conversation with somebody else and he breaks off mid-conversation to get this dig in on Anakin. Because it's when Ahsoka and Anakin are fighting about Ahsoka basically saying like you have encouraged me, demonstrated these behaviors, and now you're not supporting me when I try to do them. And Obi-Wan breaks off from a conversation he's having to get in the middle of it and say, I see Anakin's new teaching method is to do as I say, not as I do.
See, the true comedy of that moment, that line is what you're describing of him just being so like dropping everything that's going on to turn around and get that dig in. That's really extra funny.
He's like Carla on Cheers of like making an extra swing by Cliff to make a mean joke. And like, she hears an opportunity and she's got to get in there.
Yeah.
I've always thought that to me that it's never spoken, but to me, it just seems like an obvious truth. So it's in my head canon of, you know, Obi-Wan obviously cares about Anakin, obviously thinks he's important and did his best, but I'm sure it was incredibly frustrating to try to be Anakin's master. Mm-hmm. And I think Obi-Wan is just like, oh, this is so great to watch him get the kind of pushback from his Padawan that he gave me. Oh, I love it. He eats it for dinner.
It's all you grandparents out there watching your own adult kids have their own children and just going, yep.
Exactly. From there for myself, I'd go into some of the great Master Peele lines. What do you got?
One Kenobi one, I must have carbon sickness because I can swear that's Ahsoka. Like, it's so just over the top of just like, you know, she's there, but you got to get a fun line.
You'd be right. But it follows that same energy of like, this is not my problem. This is Anakin's problem. And I'm kind of enjoying relishing him having a problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, the even Evan Peele, when he's being tortured, and it's one of my favorite things to rediscover about this arc. I forgot that he's got that voice that's really, I think is really fun and fits the character of this short but ferocious and determined Jedi Master, right? Mm-hmm. And right away, no droid will ever break me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just cracked me up.
Yeah, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm looking in the credits, it's a female voice actor that voices him.
It is Blair Bess.
Okay. But it also totally reminds me of my now late grandfather, just an old crusty Russian. So I like the idea there.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's got some little colloquialisms later, not like he is, necessarily exactly saying any specific, but he's got some kind of casual ways in which he speaks, right?
Yes, totally, totally. Wonderful character.
Yeah, yeah. So another one of his lines in that voice that is Blair Bess is, according to the voices.com, is indeed a man.
But, interesting. Filoni said, okay, I'll watch that featurette. He said something about a woman.
Well, I could be totally wrong. I Googled Blair Bess and a picture of a gentleman came up. So,
I mean, look, I'm going to trust Google over Filoni. One's not wearing a cowboy hat.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Oh, I'm sure there's some Google Doodle Day where Google is all cowboy hats.
Yes, there you go.
They'll have a day to celebrate Master Filoni, and then I'm sure it'll be all cowboy hats. I think you alluded to this line earlier. There's a particularly grisly clone death where those security doors are closing, and clone is struggling to get through. We cut away, and we hear the shunk. We hear Master Peel going, "We lost one."
It's the Jedi and their relationship to the clones. He cares, and they got to move forward. He's doing everything right, but it is also just like, give him a name.
Yeah, yeah. Also, just to back up, I also found Blair Bess's Twitter feed, and again, it appears to be this gentleman.
This gentleman. There you go. Sorry, Blair.
I think that the We Lost One is the dark comedy to me, because it's a pretty dark thing to say, and there's just something about his tone that suggests so much character, right? Because we in the Clone Wars prequel films, we just see him sitting there.
yeah
right, just, and now you got this picture, this character of like, is he like at a, like, you can picture him at like a Jedi event, and he's brought like, you know, barbecued Ronto ribs, and they're real sloppy, and he's talking about an itch he's developed in his groin from his robes. Like, he just seems like
that's so funny. We went to the same kind of scenario. I just picture him at that Peace Orb ceremony, like, are we going to watch this all day here? I want to go eat my Ronto wraps that I brought. Is he holding? It's just a Peace Orb.
Oh, don't drop it. Yeah. Yeah, I just really love the character. It really entertained me. All right, other moments of comedy, whimsy, or weirdness for you?
You mentioned the line earlier, but to highlight it, just that one droid going, uh-oh, that doesn't look like General Kenobi. We'll have to improvise. this Three Stooges of droids here are very entertaining.
Yeah, I love that. I love the line from Obi-Wan, on multiple levels, of saying when he meets O.C. Sobek, I must say you're not at all what I pictured for someone with such a soft voice.
Yeah.
It's a funny, good, snarky joke from Obi-Wan, since O.C. Sobek does not have a soft voice. And then, of course, the fact that both of those characters are voiced by the same actor is a little bit of meta comedy.
Yeah, we love meta comedy around these parts.
Yeah. James Arnold Taylor gets to have multiple conversations with himself in this arc.
It's true.
Since he voices Plo Koon, Obi-Wan, and O.C. Sobek.
That's true. Absolutely.
Another moment of O.C. Sobek comedy for me is there's this kind of through line of O.C. trying to put off calls from Count Dooku.
Yes.
And Dooku finally gets through, and he's like, Dooku's totally got that vibe of like, you will not leave my texts on read. You will respond. And O.C. says, I was hoping to surprise you with good news. And Dooku says, good news would indeed be a surprise.
Old sassy Dooku.
Sassy Dooku in those jammies, right?
Yep.
Final one for me is, the I see you've trained her well is a dark moment, but it kind of made me laugh almost in terms of like satire of Tarkin. Like Ahsoka just saved his life. And instead of thanking her, he pivots to, you know, her master, the man. I don't know. There's something just that was something that's really just like anything Ahsoka does is, of course, Anakin's victory is so it's so crappy as to feel like a line of satire.
It's Tarkin being the internet in 2011 and now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Any other moments for you?
I enjoy the simple joke of everybody holding their nose at the sulfur smell. Just, I just think, you know, a little stink humor in Star Wars every now and then, I guess I'm fine with that. I thought that was kind of fun in a silly way. And you mentioned the subject stuff with the Dooku was great. And the fact that they added subject having an eye twitch, like it's like kind of the reverse, Inspector Clouseau's police chief, eye twitch bit all through those movies, the Pink Panther movies. And I enjoyed that as well, where it just kind of, it starts fluttering and gets a little worse as it goes on.
Yeah. This is great. Obviously you don't need a lot of reminders that the separatists are, vile and violent. It's a place of torture and fear. But just again, showing that like, there's no joy in this.
Yeah.
All right, then let's move on to canon and lore connections to other Star Wars stories. There's some big things here, and there's a lot of little things too. So the Nexus route, I thought was interesting to discuss. It doesn't really get brought up again in canon in any really significant ways. It is sort of referenced in a background way, but it doesn't become a major plot point. But I had two things I wanted to ask you about. When I was watching this and remembering that's what's at stake is a hyperspace lane to get to the core of the Republic homeworlds or the Separatists. They even say it could lead to an attack on Coruscant. Do you feel like the idea here is Palpatine, through negotiations with Yoda, gets this information, and then when the time is right, he's like, hey, Grievous, here's how you pop into Coruscant to kidnap me.
Yeah, 100%. And it just also highlights, if you want to get a little deeper, of just the idea of the Jedi are just, they've lost the war already, and they just don't know it, right? Like, it's just they're behind the eight ball here. Yeah, I absolutely took it as that.
Yeah, awesome. And then it's interesting to me to see the sort of the mysteries and the unknowability and the secrets of hyperspace to be really seated here in solidly George Lucas canon Star Wars, and then connect that back to this great moment we're in now where so much of the High Republic storytelling is based on these same kind of things of like, hyperspace is not entirely knowable. It needs to be pioneered. There are certain routes that everybody knows. There are other routes that might still even exist, all that kind of stuff. Did you find yourself thinking about the High Republic when this is the real MacGuffin of the episode?
Yeah, I did, because then you kind of also do that thing now where you kind of line it up, like, is it connecting? Is the High Republic tweaking any of this? And no, and that's part of the beauty of the High Republic not being so, you know, thousands of years ago. It's not too long ago, and that makes sense. If you're looking at this episode, like this is the Clone Wars, and they're still not sure how to get to every place. Like it tracks for me in a powerful way and a fun way with the High Republic.
Yeah, and it's just fascinating to always think of all the new frontiers that Star Wars can explore, and High Republic's really getting into exploring hyperspace. But even with this, we start the story Peele and Tarkin got it from somewhere, but like, did they get it from a Nile survivor? You know, did they discover, is this an old path that they got from a Santeca descendant? Like, you know, who knows?
Yeah. And we could have fun hearing that story.
Yeah. And then we go to the Citadel itself. We get Anakin's line confirming it was created to hold Jedi if any of us ever lost our way. The Citadel is also mentioned many, many places in canon. People reference it, but there's no other big storytelling, according to Wikipedia, that happens on the Citadel. Same thing with this beautiful purple and yellow planet, Lola Seyu. Any thoughts on the background of the Citadel, or if you'd like to see it again?
I would like to see the background of the Citadel. This is something you could absolutely toss into history and absolutely use again and absolutely see, just like my thoughts of, all right, so what does that mean? We're not talking about the lost 20. We're talking about are Jedi disciplined at one point where they like, you're in detention, you're going to the Citadel. Was it made to drop? What do they do? Do they torture their own Jedi? Like, or they just sit and think what you've done? I spiraled out into a lot of thoughts about the Citadel. So yes, give me the Citadel coming to Disney Plus soon.
Yeah, I mean, the way it's set up in this episode, it seems like the Jedi haven't been using it officially in any way because they had to use older data, right? So it doesn't seem like they've visited it recently, but who knows? Like, but I can see, I love how the High Republic is expanding. Like, the Lost 20 are like people who are like, I officially renounce, I walk away, right?
Right.
But obviously Jedi every once in a while kind of stumble and maybe dabble in the dark side a little bit, or... you know, maybe it's not even full dark side, but they're just disobeying Jedi order, right? Or somebody like Ty Yorick, who walks away when they're young, but is, you know, has a lot of the abilities and the trappings. Like, is the Citadel somewhere where, like, you need a timeout, Ty Yorick? Here you go.
Is it, you know, if Yoda says Liam the Shades and Liam says no, does he end up at the Citadel? That's the
problem. I'm going to guess no.
Fair enough.
Yeah. That would be a great addition to Attack of the Clones. Like, now get this right, younglings. Or to the Citadel, you will go. all right. Citadel, very cool. Happy to see it pop up again. Glad it's referenced in other places. Moving on to what could be, I think, a canon irritation for some people, carbon freezing.
It is.
So not only is this a thing that happens, the idea is they know the Citadel will scan their ship for life forms, and Obi-Wan's like, we got to be ready for that. And Anakin's like, I got an idea. Let's all carbon freeze ourselves. There's even an Ugnaught there. There's the same beautiful sounds involved. And then there's some extremely on-the-nose lines where Fives is talks about once he is carbon frozen, I don't want to end up a wall decoration.
Right.
Obi-Wan mentions carbon sickness, which implies that even for Obi-Wan, this isn't something that Anakin just made up, that this is a known thing that can happen to sentient beings. So where do you sit with all this? Is this too on the nose? Does this mess anything up about Empire Strikes Back for you, or the Mandalorian having just a carbon freezing chamber right there on his ship?
Well, it's funny because you remember there's a little burble of this same conversation around Mando season one, right? Of this. So again, going to the man with the cowboy hat, he spoke on this little featurette they have on StarWars.com, and those interviews are done a while ago now, probably about 10 years ago. So it'd be interesting to hear him talk about this even now, but how back then it was something he and Henry Gilroy wanted to do. And Filoni mentioned we were kind of fanboying about it, like, and it's called the season, early seasons of Clone Wars, the fan years, which is so funny. You've been leading this tracking the references to other Star Wars things, and it starts to get a little different as the show goes on. But he brought up a great point about this, and how even then people were upset. And he says, but how in Empire does Vader say this facility is crude? That means he has something to compare it to, and. Just taking that alone, we thought it'd be fun to go explore that a little bit. And that's where I come down on it. What fun. It's fun. It's not the whole episode isn't a half hour of Anakin doing this or anyone doing it. It's there and it's his plan and you get it. And we talk often about a lot of, you know, impressive, most impressive or little lines. That's still Anakin in there deep down. He's still got some function of his former self, of catchphrases, sayings, habits. Does he like to do a crossword puzzle in the morning? Then so does Vader. It might still be there.
Yeah. And tactics,
spinning ships, whatever you want to say. So yeah, I think it all tracks. And I think it's just at the end of the day, it's fun. It's fun to hear those sounds. It's fun to see an Ugnaught controlling it. I'm there for it.
Yeah. Fun to see just the iconic image of Obi-Wan Kenobi with that beard, that beautiful beard frozen in carbonite. Well, I'm going to give myself an honorary cowboy hat because the crude facility line is what I was going to as well.
There you go.
because that seems like what it is of like, yeah, it seems like maybe the Lando, maybe he's kind of heard of this before or whatever, or he knows that this is, you know, not rated for organic beans or whatever. So with Vader saying crude facility, it seems like he's like, yeah, no, this isn't like the fancy ones we had at the Republic when I did it and felt perfectly safe about it. So, yeah, Solo Skywalker could die. So we'll test it.
It's funny. I mean, it's definitely worth a watch because it's Filoni has a real like. He says, so I think the exact quote is like, I don't know where that came from fans watching Empire, that was the only time it's ever been done in the galaxy. He's like, I don't absolutely, where did you get that idea from? Like, it's just this real like convention panel snark that he sometimes has.
Well, I think, I think it's a thing that we all need to look out for as fans, where sometimes we have this sort of primacy effect where when we first saw it, that means it came first, right?
Yeah.
And you and I have encountered that even, I don't think with hardcore Star Wars fans, but sometimes with more casual Star Wars fans, criticizing Yoda's "Wars do not make one great" line, like, and then he's off there fighting in the war, and then you have to say, like, hey, remember he fought the war first. Like, I think there is just sometimes this instinct to have it, if we saw it there first, and that's where it happened first, unless it's not spelled out extremely clearly by the characters in that first encounter with something.
Agreed.
Yeah. Speaking of first encounters with something, we move on to the Anubas. I believe, is the first appearance of the Anubas in the Clone Wars. Later, one of my favorite bounty hunters, Embo, has an Anuba named Merrick. Can't wait to get to those episodes. Sabine also has an image of one on her armor. Images of Anubas pop up other places as well. How you feeling about the Anubas?
I like the Anubas. A little Velociraptor, a little bit of the wargs from the Lord of the Rings. I love it. I love a little dangerous. You know, we're always gone down on the positive side of organic and nature in Star Wars, but it could be a little dangerous organic being here. I like it.
Yeah, no, and clearly... maybe maltreated or at least trained to be vicious by the vicious O.C. Sobek.
Yes.
So I thought they were effectively scary, and it's always fun to see how one idea from Star Wars will echo out in different ways.
Yeah, and you're right to point out. I don't want to I don't want to pit bull these Anubas. Not every it's how you race them, how you breed them.
Yeah, exactly. Moving on then to another big canon moment that will be even bigger in the future is Echo's death.
Yeah.
He is established. We see him chatting with Fives. We see him on, presumably it's Fives talking. But Echo goes out in a blaze of glory, an explosion of glory. There's that big turret that is making it impossible for them to get to the shuttle. He rushes forward in an attempt to take down the turret. He does not make it. The turret blows up the shuttle, and Echo is consumed. It appears in flames. Then we see the shot of his helmet. For me, in this episode, it really is we've been naming clones as they go for a while. Get a couple of names shouted out, Charger, Longshot, and then a little less personal when Beale says, we lost one. But this is one that the audience knows, right? And that moment where the helmet really falls is a moment of cost to me.
Mm. Yeah, it's a tragically beautiful shot. Really love it there. Fives, Rex, and Echo running around, and that carries weight.
Yeah. So how did it sit with you differently now that, of course, Echo comes back in the end of Clone Wars, and this is his big death moment where he is presumed dead and left behind, and then goes through quite a long time of horrific torture?
Yeah, it absolutely sits different, and it sits... It cuts a little deeper. Especially was one coming into the season 7 of Clone Wars. There's so many things going on in Star Wars, and so many things you're reading, and so many things you're taking in and watching. I kind of when that Bad Batch arc in season 7 happens, and it's like I was like Echo. Oh, that's right. Echo's yes, I've met Echo before. Just brain jumbled with too much Star Wars. So now a little more clarity, and it connects, and it's absolutely more powerful and tragic.
Yeah. It is powerful to see that he was making this bold choice and, trying to do something really dangerous to save the whole group. It has some weight with his journey that we get to see in the Clone Wars, where he starts as just the rule follower, and then he, defends Kamino and gets promoted, and he is trying to be the best he can be and take a big risk for the team. It gives it some nice weight.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we have the death of a Jedi Master, a seat emptied on the council. We already talked about kind of the nature of his death, but just sort of in terms of canon, is it powerful for you to see a Jedi Council member die?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I talked about stakes earlier, but just again, a good use of this character. And I'm not saying I'm happy he's dead, but you know what I mean? If just like, if you're going to bring this character back and you're going to tell a story and hey, maybe canonically we need to have him removed by Revenge of the Sith, how are you going to do it? And this is an impactful use of the character, memorable use. And therefore you can celebrate and mourn at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's it for me. It's just from I like everything with the character. I like the story that's told. I like the way he dies. Mm-hmm. I like the meaning of his death. I like his strange, beautiful, force wielding kind of Viking funeral.
Yeah,
where they float him out to his to travel along the river of lava. I think for me, I also just because I have always, since I first saw Phantom Menace, just been fascinated by the Jedi Council, want to memorize who's on it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of change between Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, which gives them a lot of room for storytelling. And I would be happy seeing even more fates of specific Jedi.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Final thing is there is a little brief space battle, which is real fun. Mm-hmm. In terms of progress, the Jedi are still flying their Delta 7 Aether Sprites instead of their ETA-2 model Jedi Starfighters. Yep. And then Sacy Tin, as he's going into battle, and his Jedi Starfighter says, there have not been battles like these since the days of the Old Republic. Yeah. How did that sit with you? What do you feel like he's saying? What do you think that means in modern canon?
Interesting. Well, now I'm right. Yeah. Well, when you say Old Republic, you could definitely tie it to High Republic pretty easily, I suppose. There, I stopped myself from a canon mess up. But yeah, I took it as both him kind of admitting, well, this is fun, and two, just kind of the scenario and situation that they're in. The overall meaning of him just like, here, this is big, this is bad, and it's been a long time since we've had to do this kind of stuff for good reason.
Yeah, I think there's also that C.O. Bibble line of there hasn't been a full-scale war since the formation of the Republic, right?
Yeah.
But then we got things like High Republic, and there are a lot of big battles.
So
for me, I really take it as this, there are two sides. You know, it isn't the Jedi fighting a scourge like the Drenger or the Nile or having a big battle. It is... this is a war, and we're on one side and they are on the other. And for me, it almost feels like another moment to raise the stakes and another moment to kind of highlight, like,
yeah,
this is the choice the Jedi have made. And like, I don't know if Sacy Tin has just like not been out in the field a lot, but it almost seems personal, like, oh, wow, I'm doing this. I'm engaging in a full scale war, uh-huh, one giant army against another giant army.
Well, yeah, again, this episode just has so much of that going on. If we need these hyperspace routes to determine the future of the war. I mean, it should be big, and that does kind of match it. It's awkward in its own, you know. Again, yeah, you're right. Like, have you been working in the kitchens the whole time? Like, what are you doing?
Been a lot of battles, right?
Yeah,
right.
But great use of just the moment and what it means.
Yeah, it was a nice heavy line for me. Was there anything, any other canon that you wanted to discuss?
A fun reference. It's not intentional at all, I don't think, but subject dealing with the droid slow in the uptake of information when they're being breached, and him just kind of like yelling, get everything out there. Totally reminded of Krennic on Scarif going, deploy the garrison. Do you like not see what's happening out there? These poor bad guy leaders always surrounded by incompetent folks. But no, this one little one, to the degree that it was intentional, I don't know, but I thought it was fun to see. You mentioned the magnetic hallway battle and Anakin's arm gets him stuck to the top to complete that moment and get out of that sequence and save the day. At that point in time, Anakin kind of has to willingly get electrocuted. And I'm like, well, all right, hold on to that thought, Anakin. You might have to do that again at the end of all days. So I just wanted to highlight that.
Yeah, there are a couple different times in the Clone Wars where he gets violently shocked and you're like, you're gonna discover the worst kind of shocked by electricity, finger electricity.
Yeah.
Even worse.
Yeah.
No one even likes worse. Yeah.
Finger electrical shocks.
Only now at the end do you understand finger electricity. Yeah. So a lot of great canon connections and some kind of major stuff. So very fun to discuss. Was there anything you disliked or questioned in this arc?
Not for me personally. I thought well-crafted episodes that just scratch the itch of all the things we love Star Wars for. I sometimes do like when episodes lean one way to another, but this one just kind of gave it all when you dig in like we have here today. It's really fun. And one of those, even from a distance, if you haven't watched the Clone Wars in a while, like you could jump into this one or you might remember it in the back of your brain as a fun arc, and therefore happy to celebrate it here today.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess we didn't talk about Tarkin. That's a pretty major canon thing. But is there anything in particular about Tarkin that we haven't touched on that you wanted to?
No. The connections are pretty clear and prevalent throughout the episode, so it's there. But again, a great use of, hey, we needed an officer, and George suggests Tarkin, and then they carry it out. And this is one of the big early jobs of Stephen Stanton in Star Wars. He does a wonderful job of not just impersonating Peter Cushing, but bringing a character to life and connecting that character. It's an emotional canon connection more than just a straight canon connection. So, again, great use of Captain Tarkin. And I remember watching this back in the day. It was one of those like, oh no, here we go. And that is a part of the reason we're showing up to this party.
Yeah, I think the final thing for me to say on Tarkin is, I was thrilled when he showed up, and I thought it was so effective because, you know, eventually in Star Wars canon, we know, like, hey, Wolf Yularen ends up in the ISB, and he's actually at the Death Star meeting. But when you're just watching Clone Wars, if you don't know that yet, you just see Yularen as like, well, he's one of the heroes, right? He's with the heroes.
Yeah.
You eventually realize that he joins, but then Tarkin, you're like, oh, yeah, it's just such a great visceral gut punch of remember. The good guys are going to become the bad guys, and there's some bad guys in their midst right now. Mm-hmm. I think that he's also that moment where he's being very strategic of kind of like Anakin's like, you don't want to piss off Master Peele. That's not going to be good for your career. And he's like, the Chancellor has already taken a liking to me It's explicit, but it's also like just very clear. Also, it's one little line. It's from Tarkin's perspective, but it gives you that canon perspective that we get in a lot of books of Palpatine knowing what he's going to do and cherry picking like, that person's brutal. I'll be able to use them quite well in my new empire.
Yeah, add them to my Rolodex. I also do love going back a bit to the comedy stuff, just Anakin and Tarkin kind of getting in a Chancellor clout off. Or just like, who knows him better?
Yeah, it's like, but he's in my top eight on my space. Yeah, like there's a real, you're right, there is a real grudge match there. Yep, like, yep. I'm actually quite close to him as well.
Yeah, love that.
But you're both going to be closer than you probably like, ultimately. Going back to anything we disliked or questioned, we've talked about this on many episodes recently, so I don't want to belabor it, but, you know, Star Wars does have this evolving relationship with how casual it is about animal slaughter. And the Anubis slaughter is in this moment right now, as we're analyzing that more, that is a little difficult to watch. Obviously the heroes are defending themselves. It's all sort of justified, but I've just felt myself feeling sorry for the Anubis.
Yeah, no, yeah, they don't know. They're just, it's another day at the office and they're hungry, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Go eat a Jedi. Yeah, is what they're told. this is a minor thing, but because Echo and is important in earlier episodes, he ends up being very important in future episodes. I wouldn't have minded just a couple moments with Echo earlier to kind of really remind us who he is and to heighten the tragedy of his apparent death a little bit.
I'll second that and agree with that in the sense of which might fed into some of my earlier, Echo, you know, again, I'm very aware of Echo and Fives and all that stuff, but just... I do agree with you. It maybe has more impact now because we've got the whole picture. But hey,
yeah, you know, exactly. A minor criticism for this great arc. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, sir. Full.
Okay.
Full robust discussion. About
Final thing for me is I made a joke up top about O.C. Sobeck sounding like Christopher Walken with the throat injury. The actual truth, I looked up, James Arnold Taylor did many voices for the Clone Wars as well as, you know, Obi-Wan, Plo Koon, asked to come up with new ideas for a lot of different characters. And what he said is he combined Christopher Walken with Al Pacino. And it is a really unique, interesting voice. So just wanted to shout out that I think that is a great and unique and fun voice for O.C. Sobeck.
Like it.
All right, Ken, we always wrap up by talking about toys. If you could have a toy or really any kind of merch inspired by this episode, who or what do you want?
I think we need a 3¾ collection of everyone in the carbon freezer scene. Like you just get those. You get all the clones, Anakin, Obi-Wan in the carbonite. You just get a,
yeah, you get a, I think you can get like the carbonite Han Solo ice cubes. Need an Obi-Wan Kenobi
yes
in carbonite ice cube.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is kind of a joke one. I don't actually want it, but picturing it makes me laugh. You know how there'll be those kind of just statues that are like a posed, like heroic moment. Mm-hmm. I would love like a statue that's this posed heroic moment where O.C. Sobek is holding Tarkin up and Ahsoka's blade is just straight through his heart.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bookend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's something that should be in the center of like a college's quad, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like a big statue just celebrating this one episode of the Clone Wars. Love it. Love it. Excellent. I'm sure that will be available on thinkgeek.com very soon. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up is the final arc of season 3. It is episode 21, Padawan Lost, and episode 22, Wookiee Hunt, where we'll get to dive into Anakin's attachment to Ahsoka even more. I can't wait to discuss that one with you next week, Ken. Yeah. For now, what do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
When stuck in the depths of your recording process, just find the best way to move forward.
Adaptation is very, very important indeed. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We are the Force Center Podcast. We're on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. Not as active there, we understand, but we're there. You can find us. And we're also on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And we can be found on a lot of different spots. There's a lot of places to choose to listen to your podcast. Try Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, and a whole lot more. And finally, you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. Support there at any level gets you into our Discord, where every day we have a fun discussion with a great community of fans. So check it out at patreon.com/Force Center. You can follow me at KenNapsack or KenNapsack.com. Next upcoming, if you're listening at the time of this release of this episode, October 7th, 2021, just in case you're listening 3 years from now, I am doing comedy in New York City at the New York Comedy Club with Mark Ellis, Jen Sturger, and others. Go to my website, KenNapsack.com, for a ticket link. Joseph.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok as @JosephScrimshaw, and you can check out all my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for R2-D2's three brave reprogrammed battle droids, this has been the Clone Wars Report.